Hi, and welcome back to Undisclosed, Toward Justice. My name is Rabia Chaudhary. I'm an attorney and author, and I'm here with my colleague, Colin Miller.
Hi, this is Colin Miller. I'm a professor at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog. In episode one of the Serial podcast, host Sarah Koenig framed the story we've been following for more than a decade in such a way that it created a meme we couldn't erase from our minds. That meme was of Forgetful Adnan, in all caps, with Koenig creating the understanding in listeners' minds that Adnan had no story for what happened between the end of school and the start of track practice on January 13th, 1999, the day Hay disappeared. Here's Sarah Koenig setting up this framing early in the first episode of Serial.
Adnan knows better than anyone how unhelpful this all is, how problematic, because it plays both ways. If he's innocent, right, it's any other day. Of course he doesn't remember. But you can also read it as, how convenient, he doesn't remember the day. So no one can fact check him or poke holes in his story, because he has no story.
But what if Serial got it wrong? What if Adnan did have a story about what he did between the end of school and the start of track practice on January 13th? And what if that story could be fact-checked, not just by someone with some sweat and hustle, but instead with an anchoring event that Adnan himself volunteered, as well as a clear way to check whether he was right? This isn't mere speculation, but instead a breadcrumb that we found in Christina Gutierrez's defense files. Another alibi witness that she failed to contact. Not one who could possibly prove Adnan's legal innocence, like Asia McClain, but someone who could prove his factual innocence, even if the state's timeline were off. It's taken us a decade to track down this lead, but if you know one thing about us, it's that we never give up. And now finally, all these years later, you'll hear directly from this alibi witness who proves Adnan's actual innocence, with us able to fact-check their shared story through the information Adnan volunteered all those years ago. This is the Actual Innocence episode of Undisclosed.
To reorient you to everything in this case, let's drill down into the timeline of key events. But first, I almost would advise you to pause the episode, go grab a pen and a piece of paper, and pull up a calendar for January of 1999, because believe me, you're gonna need to take notes on this one, because today's episode, in classic Undisclosed style, is deep in the weeds and heavily detail-oriented. All right, let's get into the meat and potatoes now. At 2:15 p.m. on Wednesday, January 13th, 1999, the final bell for Woodlawn High School rung, ending the AP psychology class taken by Adnan, Hay, and some other key witnesses in this case. Hay then had a task she was supposed to complete about 1 hour after the end of school, picking up her cousin from Campfield Early Learning Center. There's some conflicting statements that might place that pickup a little bit earlier or a little bit later, but the general consensus seems to be that pickup was at 3:15 p.m., exactly 1 hour after Woodlawn's final bell. Everyone says that Hay took this task very seriously, meaning that any abduction of her would have had to take place in that 1 hour window between 2:15 p.m. and 3:15 p.m. Now, mapping things out, Campfield Early Learning Center is approximately 4 miles due north of Woodlawn High School, with Google Maps estimating the drive takes about 15 minutes on a weekday afternoon. What this means is that Hay would likely have to leave Woodlawn by about 3 p.m. to make it to Campfield on time. Now, all this makes sense in the context of the state's initial timeline of the case, which is that Debbie was the last innocent person to see Hay alive at about 3 p.m. on January 13th as she was about to leave school. Under this timeline, Hay leaves school just in time to pick up her cousin. But at trial, the state shifts its timeline. In closing arguments, the prosecution famously, some would say infamously, claimed that Hay was dead by 2:36 p.m. Specifically, Assistant State's Attorney Kathleen Murphy tells the jury the following.
We know that class ended at 2:15 that day. And remember back to Aisha Pittman's testimony. The defendant was talking to Hay Lee at that point in time, and Inez Butler sees Hay as she rushes out of the school, grabs her snack, and heads out the door. Ladies and gentlemen, she's dead within 20 minutes. 2:36 p.m., the defendant calls Jay Wilds. come get me at Best Buy.
This 2:36 p.m. call has its own lore as the come and get me call, again in all caps, and it would set into motion the sequence of events that led to serial, undisclosed, and three justices of Maryland's highest court finding that Adnan's convictions should be tossed. Here's me talking to Sarah Koenig on the first episode of Serial.
And so I went to go see him. So this is the same day he's been convicted. And this is the first time I actually had a conversation with him about, you know, what's going on. And I was like, you know, Adnan, the whole thing's turning on these 20, 25 minutes. Like, you know, where were you? And he's like, she disappeared in January. You know, in March, you're asking me, like, where were you after school for 20 minutes on a specific day? Like, no, all the days are the same to me, you know.
But then he mentions that there was this one girl, an alibi girl.
He's like, the only thing... all I could offer is, he's like, I remember, he's like, there's a girl I go to school with who, her name's Asia McLean. He's like, right after I got arrested, she wrote me a couple of letters, and she said she always wanted to see my family. And she said she specifically remembers me being at the library, at the public library, right after school.
The Woodlawn Public Library is just across the parking lot from Woodlawn High School. It's not technically part of the campus, but it might as well be.
I was then able to find Asia, and she signed an affidavit saying that she remembered seeing Adnan on Wednesday, January 13th, 1999, at the Woodlawn Public Library between 2:20 and 2:40 p.m. Clearly, if Adnan was at the Woodlawn Public Library for the 20 minutes between 2:20 and 2:40, he did not get a ride to Best Buy from Heyman Lee. He hasn't killed her at the end of that ride, and he has not made a 2:36 p.m. call from a Best Buy payphone, as Kathleen Murphy claimed in closing.
As a result, Adnan included an ineffective assistance of counsel claim in his PCR petition in 2010, alleging that defense counsel Christina Gutierrez was constitutionally deficient for failing to contact Asia McLean as an alibi witness. But when Adnan's PCR hearing was held, the case hit a bit of a snag. Asia McLean did not come to testify at that hearing, with Assistant State's Attorney Kevin Urich giving the following explanation.
Sheriff, how did you learn that the Senate was up?
A young lady named Asia called me.
And what does she say?
She was concerned because she was being asked questions about an affidavit she'd written back at the time of the trial. She told me that she'd only written it because she was getting pressure from the family, and she basically wrote it to please them and get them off her back.
Understandably, Judge Martin Welsh, who was handling that PCR hearing, denied Adnan relief on this alibi claim. But then, after Serial aired, Asia wrote a new affidavit. It was dated January 13th, 2015, exactly 16 years to the day that Hay disappeared. And in this new affidavit, Asia doubled down on her claim that she had seen Adnan at the Woodlawn Public Library on January 13th, 1999, until about 2:40 p.m. She also made clear that she wrote her prior affidavit of her own free will and was not pressured into putting pen to paper. Finally, she said that when she called Kevin Urich about the case, he, quote, convinced me into believing I should not participate in any ongoing proceedings. Asia's new affidavit led to the reopening of Adnan's PCR proceeding. And as part of that proceeding, Adnan's attorney was able to include a new claim based upon evidence that was uncovered by her own Susan Simpson, specifically an AT&T disclaimer that was sent with Adnan's cell phone records that said in pertinent part, quote, any incoming calls will not be considered reliable information for location. This was critical given that two incoming calls to Adnan's cell phone were crucial to the state trying to prove Adnan's presence in Lincoln Park in the 7 o'clock hour. And so, Judge Welch had three issues to consider at the reopened PCR proceeding. One, was Christina Gutierrez ineffective for failing to contact Asia McLean? Two, was there a Brady violation in connection with the AT&T disclaimer? And three, was Christina Gutierrez ineffective for failing to cross-examine the state's cell tower expert with the AT&T disclaimer? In 2016, Judge Welch denied Adnan a new trial on these first two claims, but he granted him a new trial on the third one. Here's CBS News reporting on the result.
That's right. A couple months ago, they had a hearing where his lawyers put forward three different theories for why he should get a new trial. The first was that his original legal team didn't contact a key alibi witness. But the judge didn't buy that as sufficient grounds to overturn his conviction. Now, his lawyers also argued that the prosecution withheld specific cell phone records that would have helped his case. Judge also wasn't buying that. But the judge did agree and did overturn his conviction based on the argument that his previous legal team failed to properly cross-examine an expert witness on cell phone location records. So those were the records they proved to be very important.
So why did Judge Welch deny Adnan's alibi claim? Judge Welch found that Asia McLean was credible and that Christina Gutierrez was constitutionally deficient for failing to contact her. But at the PCR proceeding, Thira Vignaraja argued for the state that had Asia testified, the state could have shifted its timeline, so the murder occurred after 2:36 p.m., with a come-and-get-me call now being the 3:15 p.m. call received in Adnan's cell phone. Judge Welch rejected the theory that the 3:15 p.m. call could have been the come-and-get-me call because it didn't work with what Jay Wilds testified to at trial. But he did accept the general argument that the jury could have believed the murder took place after 2:36 p.m.
The state appealed Judge Welch's ruling, leading to the case going to the Intermediate Appellate Court in Maryland, the Court of Special Appeals. In 2018, that court upheld the decision to grant Adnan a new trial, but on different grounds. Here's reporting by WJZ.
We begin with breaking news tonight. Adnan Syed will get a new trial. He is the man convicted of killing his ex-girlfriend, but this podcast serial raised some serious questions about his guilt. WJZ is live downtown. Abijoy Burnett with the ruling from Maryland's second highest court. Abijoy?
Mayor, this case has been in the legal system for almost 2 decades, but now Adnan Syed and his attorney have a new victory.
Today, the Maryland Court of Special Appeals granted Adnan Syed a new trial. In 2000, the then 17-year-old was convicted for murdering his high school girlfriend, Haman Lee, then burying her in a shallow grave in Leakin Park. But 6 years later, a judge vacated that conviction and said he deserves a new trial. Syed's attorney said that's because a key witness was never introduced during trial. That witness, Asia McLean, said she saw Syed in the Woodlawn Library around the same time prosecutors say Lee was murdered.
And there were some questions about the reliability of cell phone tower records, but Adnan Syed's attorney said this decision to grant him a new trial ultimately came down to the fact that a key witness was not introduced.
Specifically, unlike Judge Welch, the Court of Special Appeals concluded that there was a reasonable probability that the jury would not have convicted Adnan had they heard from Asia McLean. And on the cell tower issue, the court did not reach the merits of Judge Welch's holding that he made after hearing cell tower experts testify at the PCR proceeding. Instead, the judges held that this issue was waived because Adnan didn't include it in his first PCR petition all the way back in 2010. Now, this all set the stage for the state's final appeal to Maryland's highest court. And as you all know, that court overturned the lower courts and denied Adnan a new trial in a 4-3 ruling. Here's more reporting by WJZ.
We are following breaking news right now. Maryland's highest court has just determined that Adnan Syed does not deserve a new trial. This reverses the opinion of a lower appellate court reinstating Syed's conviction in the nearly 20-year-old murder case. Adnan Syed's case gained international attention as the subject of the Serial podcast in 2014. He was convicted 19 years ago of killing his former girlfriend and Woodlawn High School classmate Haman Lee. The Court of Appeals ruled that even though Syed's attorney erred in not investigating an alibi witness, the error did not affect the outcome of that case.
Breaking that down, 6 of the 7 justices of Maryland's highest court agreed that Christina Gutierrez was constitutionally deficient for failing to contact Asia McLean. Those 6 justices found Asia McLean credible, as did current state's attorney Ivan Bates, who met with her personally. But only 3 of the 7 justices found that Asia's testimony likely would have changed the outcome at trial. The problem was that the 4-justice majority disagreed with the dissent. Like Judge Welch, they also believed that Adnan could have seen Asia at the library until 2:40 p.m. and still have time afterwards to get a ride from Hay and then kill her at the end of that ride. Specifically, they stated that, quote, the jury could have disbelieved that Mr. Syed killed Ms. Lee by 2:36 p.m., as the state's timeline suggested, yet still believed that Mr. Syed had the opportunity to kill Ms. Lee after 2:40 p.m. Ms. McLean's testimony, according to her affidavit, failed to account for Mr. Saeed's whereabouts after 2:40 p.m. on January 13, 1999. Now, fast forward to 2025, after Ivan Bates withdrew the motion to vacate Adnan's convictions, and we were left with the following situation. There's the bombshell from episode one of the series, but that goes to a Brady violation and questions of attorney-client privilege that could take years to litigate. In episodes 2 through 5, we've addressed a lot of loose ends that could lead to lots of avenues of relief, but there's nothing concrete enough to toss Adnan's convictions at this point.
But then there was the biggest loose end of all. It was something I noticed soon after I started reviewing the defense files from Adnan's attorney, Christina Gutierrez. On March 12, 1999, shortly after he was arrested, Adnan had a meeting with one of his attorneys, Chris Floor. Now, for those of you who don't recall, Adnan was initially represented in connection with his bail hearings by two attorneys with the Lawyers at Bail Project, Chris Floor and Doug Colbert. We've had Chris Floor on the podcast before. When I asked him about Asia McLean, he said the plan was always that Doug and he would handle questions of pretrial release while a new attorney would handle the trial. As such, their role wasn't to talk to alibi witnesses like Asia McLean, which makes a lot of sense because presenting alibi witnesses at a bail hearing can be dangerous. In fact, the danger in doing so is the subject of my summer research project in connection with a Law Review article I'm writing on reciprocal discovery. So turning to that meeting with Adnan on March 12, 1999, it led to Chris Floor writing a memo that was passed over to Christina Gutierrez and found in her files. The memo is handwritten, and no one would mistake Chris for a calligrapher, but the first part of the memo says something like, Dion Taylor, same car as Adnan, two-door Accord, Adnan's has four doors, basketball game that day. Dion saw him, and indecipherable word, Adnan's car was making a funny noise, cooling fan wire was loose, fixed 1 to 2 weeks after, Beji, M&N Car Care, family's mechanic, Beji may be wary of attorney coming in. School schedule should list the game. This happened at 3 to 3:30 p.m. in front of school. Front entrance to gym. So yeah, wow. It certainly seems like, contrary to what was said in the serial, Adnan did have a story about what he did between the end of school and the start of track practice. And not just a story, but a story that could be fact-checked against the school schedule to see whether Woodlawn had a home basketball game on Wednesday, January 13th, 1999, the day that Hay disappeared. Moreover, it looked like Adnan was indeed claiming that he saw Dion on January 13th, 1999, given that the rest of the memo deals with calls to Krista and Yasser on Adnan's cell phone that also took place on January 13th. When I saw this memo in the file, I immediately recognized its possible significance and set out trying to track down Dion. Looking back through old emails, I see a chain I started between myself and Susan Simpson, asking if she knew who Dion was. She didn't, and even initially thought there was a transcription error and that Dion's name might actually be Damon. Then, there was an email chain I started with Krista, a Woodlawn student and friend to both Hay and Adnan. Looking back, I see that I asked her about a, quote, Dion Taylor, who would have been on the basketball team, because that appeared to be the basis for Adnan's memory of meeting up with him. Krista came back with two things. First, she gave me a Woodlawn schedule for 1999, which will end up being crucial in this case. Second, she confirmed there was indeed a Dion Taylor in their graduating class. She didn't know him, and he wasn't on the basketball team, but he was in the baseball team, according to the yearbook. At the time, I wondered whether Adnan was mistaken about the sporting event at issue, which might make his memory worthless. And it was unclear from the memo whether Adnan was saying that Dion and he had met at Dion's car, which would have been hugely helpful, or Adnan's car, which would have been confusing and possibly harmful to Adnan's case. But I didn't give up. Looking back through my records, I see my unsuccessful efforts on Spokio to track down Dion. I found dozens of phone numbers and email addresses for people named Dion Taylor in the Mid-Atlantic metro area, but they all ended up being dead ends. At around the same time, we were wrapping season one of Undisclosed, and I turned my attention to the Joey Watkins case that we covered in season two, as well as researching case law for Asia McLean, Adnan's other alibi witness, in connection with the reopened PCR proceeding. So as a result, we never did track down Dion Taylor, that one loose end who might be able to answer the question that left a narrow majority of Maryland's highest court unconvinced that Adnan's conviction should be thrown out. the one loose end who could prove Adnan's actual innocence in connection with the death of Haman Lee.
But all that changed recently when Dion himself reached out to me offering what he believed was crucial information, and I was finally able to do an interview with him just weeks ago.
Hello, my name is Dion Taylor. Went to Woodlawn, class of 99.
And if you're wondering why Colin's Spokio searches didn't work, it's because Dion no longer lives near Maryland.
I'm recording you here. So you're out on the West Coast?
Yes.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Let's start with how well Dion knew Adnan. With alibi witnesses, you want someone who knows the defendant well enough to remember interacting with him, but not so well that the state could accuse him of lying on his behalf. And on this front, Dion fits the bill.
Did you know Adnan outside of school, or did you only hang out in school?
Mainly in school.
Okay.
In school, not outside. Yeah.
But while Dion only really knew Adnan from school, they had been in school together going all the way back to middle school, which is why Dion was shocked when he was arrested.
Can you tell me kind of what you remember of that time, like when Adnan got arrested? What was going through your head? What were the kids saying at the school?
What was going through my head at the time, I said, pretty much, for what? Like, why would he get locked up? You know, it kind of threw me for a loop, because this is the same guy I seen in middle school get bullied and not get upset. And, you know, same guy seen by that same bully get slapped in the face and his glasses just fly off his face, and he just looked up at the guy and asked him, "Are you okay?" And we looking at Adnan like, bro, if you don't knock him out, you know, I'm like, what did he get locked up for? Like,
wow.
What?
As you can see from Dion's reaction in this clip, he had no idea of the nature of the case against Adnan, and therefore no reason to believe that he could be the key to this case. And all of this seems completely understandable given what Dion says he was going through at the time.
Did you contact Adnan after he got locked up? Did you reach out to him?
I did not.
Why was that? I'm curious.
To be honest, my high school years was the worst years of my life.
Oh, like personally, you were going through a lot.
Yeah. I would say from the age of 12 to the age of 18, hell on earth for me. So I had personal issues going on within my family, and stuff that it was happening to me at home. So
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
So what does Dion have to say about the day in question, and does it line up with what Adnan told Chris Floor? Here's me giving Dion the floor to describe what he remembers.
So I'm just going to like hand over the floor to you to tell me what you think you remember, or what you do remember.
Well, the date is...
You're not sure about the date.
It's
right?
Tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah, the date is tricky because I remember the event in which my car broke down in a circle when I was training for baseball, upcoming baseball, because it was the winter season and I didn't play any sports during the winter season. And we had just had all that snow over the Christmas break, and my car had broke down at a friend's house. The axle had broke, and I sat on the car for all winter break, finally got it back running. Well, the car always ran, but I finally got the axle fixed, and I think I can't remember what day it was. I think it was like a Saturday. I got it fixed. And the sun was out. It was nice, almost spring-like, and it was January. I'm like, okay. So drove my car, went to school that following week. I want to say it was like a Wednesday or Thursday where they just started getting cloudy and cold. And I'm like, what's going on? And my car broke down. And Anon approached me. I think he was going to the... He was either coming from or going to the library, the main library off campus, which is across from the 7-Eleven. And he said something about the weather. It's like a brain fog. I can't really get the exact words he said, but it was something about the weather. And then he was like, your car okay? Because we had the same car. Mine was a coupe, and he had a four-door Honda Accord. He was like, oh yeah, my people can fix it. I had my people look at it. I think I took it to the shop, and they told me that some vacuum hoses were busted, and I needed to replace them.
So you were kind of stranded in the circle is what you were saying, and then he saw you there?
I had just pulled up and went to go grab something from the concession stand before I, you know, because I can't park in the circle. So I just pulled up, you know, get something from the concession stand, and I was getting ready to pull off. But my car wouldn't start, and that's when I saw Anon. And because I'm under the hood, so I didn't know which way he was coming from or going. I just was under the hood trying to figure out what's going on with my car.
Can you tell me around what time of day this would have been?
This was after school. I want to say maybe 3 o'clock, maybe 3 o'clock, 3:30, because I left and came back to school. I went home and came back. So it was like 3:30. Something like that.
So going through Dion's story, a lot of it lines up with what Adnan told Chris Floor. First, as both Adnan and Dion noted, they had the same type of car, a Honda Accord, but Dion had a coupe and Adnan had a four-door. Second, Dion notes how Adnan said he could have his people fix his car, which lines up with the note about Adnan's family mechanic. Third, both Adnan and Dion say that Dion's car broke down by the front entrance to the gym. Now, Dion doesn't say this in so many words, but he does say his car broke down after parking it in front of the concession stand and getting some snacks. And we know from testimony by athletic trainer Inez Butler that the concession stand was at the front entrance to the gym. Fourth, Dion says he remembers this happening on a Wednesday or Thursday. And January 13th, the day Hay disappeared, was a Wednesday. Fifth, both Adnan and Dion say this happened roughly between 3 and 3:30 p.m. Sixth, Dion remembers Adnan going to or coming from the Woodlawn Public Library, which would fit perfectly with Asia leaving Adnan behind at the library around 2:40 p.m. and Adnan leaving shortly thereafter. Beyond that, Dion mentions the day this happened being a warm day that turned cold, which definitely describes Wednesday, January 13th. As you might recall, it was an unseasonably warm day before the weather shifted and the snowstorm hit that night. Now, on one hand, Dion seems to imply that the weather might have already started shifting when his car broke down, which wasn't the case. On the other hand, Dion can't remember what words Adnan said about the weather. So it's entirely possible that Adnan mentioned the forecast, saying the weather would take a turn for the worse that night. But who knows, one way or the other, it's been 26 years. The same kind of goes for Dion's memory of his car previously being serviced on an unseasonably warm and sunny Saturday. Looking at the first three Saturdays in January 1999, the Weather Archive Wonderground doesn't show any of them being sunny, but the second and third Saturdays were relatively warm for winter in Baltimore. Saturday the 16th hit a high of 51 degrees after a couple of days in the 30s, and Saturday the 9th hit a high of 43 degrees after four straight days of low highs and low lows, with the temperatures even dropping to single digits on the 6th. One thing's for sure, though. The day he describes really couldn't be Saturday the 2nd. That day had a high of 26 degrees and a low of 17 degrees, both of which are quite cold and below freezing.
This detail about the weather on Saturday, January the 2nd is important because I can already hear the skeptics saying that Dion didn't know what day his car broke down, meaning that Rabia could have spent the call trying to convince him that this was on Wednesday, January 13th, the day that Hay disappeared. But here's the thing. When Rabia interviewed Dion, she didn't know the weather on January the 2nd. In fact, her initial reaction was to think that Dion had his car serviced on Saturday, January the 2nd, followed by a breaking down at Woodlawn on Wednesday, January 6th.
And I think it was like a Wednesday or Thursday. I can't remember. I know it was near the end of the week because that's the only time I really tried. I didn't train in the beginning of the week. I always trained at the end of the week, Wednesday, Thursday, Fridays. So I'm not sure which date that would have been, but I do remember that it was getting... It got cold again. So that week, the weather started changing back to like winter weather.
Okay.
But it was that Saturday. I do know it was a Saturday that I got my car back, meaning from the axle at the friend house. This is before my car broke down in the circle the following week.
Okay. So like on Saturday, you got a fix, and 5 days later is when you couldn't start it in the circle type of thing. Like that was
You could say that.
Okay, that might put it at the previous previous week, because this would be when January 13th, which is the day Hay disappeared, was a Wednesday. It was a warm day, and that night a really bad ice storm hit. I'll take a look at the weather, but if you had it done over the winter break, I'll take a look at what the break was. I feel like you would have been back in school the Wednesday before, so this could be the previous Wednesday too, but I'll take a look. But although I don't know if when you got back from winter break, if your baseball practice would have started immediately in the first week or would it have waited a week, do you know?
No. So when the winter breaks, so we don't start baseball until we do the training when it's cold. So January, February is the training. So we don't really pick up in season until like March, April, May, because we technically, so December, November, December, January is like indoor track, basketball, stuff like that. So around, you know, mid-January, February, all of February is when we really train for baseball, which is the spring season.
So two things about this. First, you hear Dion saying he started training for baseball in mid-January, which would work well for Wednesday, January the 13th, because that date is squarely in the middle of January. But it wouldn't work so well for Wednesday, January 6th, which is definitely early January. Second, and much more importantly, there's something else that Rabia didn't know when doing this call with Dion, beyond Saturday, January the 2nd being a frigid day. And that's this. Adnan was absent from school on Wednesday, January the 6th. Therefore, there's no way this Adnan-Dion interaction happened outside Woodlawn High School on Wednesday, January 6th. Now, I'll actually go through each day from January 1st to January 24th in 1999, to explain why this Adnan-Dion meetup only could have happened on the day that Hay disappeared. But before doing so, let's listen to one final part of the Dion call and then discuss some follow-up texts with Dion as well as what Adnan remembers. First, from Rabia's call with Dion, we have the following.
So can I ask you this? So Adnan comes up. Do you remember anything about like what he was wearing? Did he have a bag with him? Did he have books with him? Was he alone? Anything about that? Did he mention fasting? Because it would have been Ramadan.
Yeah, he definitely was fasting. I know all about that. My dad and my brother is Sunni, so I do know about Ramadan and when all that happens. Yeah, he did mention that. I don't remember if he had. See, that's what I'm saying. I was so focused and mad at the car that I don't remember if he had books, if he was coming. He did have books. I don't know if he was coming or going to practice, like coming from or going. I just know we was in the circle and I had my head under the hood and we was talking, and then I focused back on the car. He was like, I'll catch you later.
So from this, we see that Dion's interaction with Adnan happened during Ramadan, which ended on Tuesday, January 19th, 1999. And it happened on a day when Adnan had track practice. While Dion wasn't sure whether Adnan was coming from or going to track practice, it makes sense it was the latter if this happened roughly from 3 o'clock to 3:30 p.m. Next, from a follow-up text chain between Robbie and Dion, we have the following.
Hey, Dion, I have a question. Were you ever contacted by any of Adnan's attorneys back in 99 or 2000?
No, not at all.
That's what I expected. One more question. Do you remember if there was a basketball game that night you saw Adnan? I know it's a long shot that you might remember, but just checking.
Yes, it was a game that night, I believe.
Can I ask how you remember?
I always attend basketball games after my workout. So first, we have Dion confirming that, like Asia McLean, he was never contacted by Christina Gutierrez. And second, we have both Adnan and Dion remembering that their meetup occurred on the day of a boys' home basketball game. This takes us back to the start of the episode. Returning to the Chris Floor memo, we asked Adnan about it. And yes, Adnan's response was that his memory was he had this meetup with Dion on Wednesday, January 13th, 1999, with him telling Dion about his family's mechanic, who had recently fixed his Honda Accord after it had started making a funny noise. This was Adnan establishing his alibi, an alibi he says that Gutierrez disregarded, just like Asia McLean, who likely saw him just before Dion did. But beyond just establishing an alibi, before being gaslit by Gutierrez into thinking he had the wrong day, Adnan provided information and a tool by which his trial team could check in that alibi. As the memo makes clear, Adnan, like Dion, ties his memory of the meetup to a boys' home basketball game that evening. When Rabia asked Adnan about why his memory was tied to this boys' home basketball game, he responded as follows.
So, because all athletic events occurred in that section of the building, you would know generally if there was a game going on that afternoon, evening, i.e. the gym was being used for a game. Whenever there was a game in the gym, as opposed to random practice, there was a lot more activity going on, especially at the concession stand, and that activity affected your going to and from the locker room, bathroom, practice area, track, etc.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This also helps to explain Dion's memory. As he noted in the last clip, his car died in connection with him going to the concession stand, which would further solidify his breakdown happening on the day of a boys' home basketball game. Now, notably, as we've said, Adnan didn't just tie his memory to a boys' basketball game. Instead, he said to check the school schedule as a way to corroborate his claim. And as I noted, Krista gave me such a schedule, which I was able to combine with Adnan's attendance records and historical newspapers to isolate possible days when Dion could have come into contact with Adnan. And here's my clear conclusion. Wednesday, January 13th is the only possible day when Dion could have seen Adnan. Yep, that's right. The day that Hay disappeared is the only possible day when Dion could have seen Adnan, establishing a rock-solid alibi and actual innocence. So to get there, let's start by going day-to-day from January 1st to January 24th, 1999, to show how we start with only 5 theoretically possible days during this period when this car incident could have occurred.
Friday, January 1st was New Year's Day and also during winter break, so there was no school. Saturday, January 2nd was a weekend and also during winter break, so there was no school. Sunday, January 3rd was a weekend and also winter break, so there was no school. Monday, January 4th was the first day back to school, but Adnan was absent. We'll skip Tuesday, January 5th for now. As noted earlier, on Wednesday, January 6th, Adnan was absent from school. We will also skip Thursday, January 7th for now. Friday, January 8th was a snow day, so there was no school. Saturday, January 9th was a weekend, so there was no school. Sunday, January 10th was a weekend, so there was no school. Now we'll skip Monday, January 11th through Wednesday, January 13th for now. Thursday, January 14th was an ice snow day, so there was no school. Friday, January 15th was an ice snow day, so there was no school. Saturday, January 16th was a weekend, so there was no school. Sunday, January 17th was a weekend, so there was no school. Monday, January 18th was Martin Luther King Day, so there was no school. On Tuesday, January 19th, Adnan had an excused absence for Eid al-Fitr, which marks the end of Ramadan, effectively ending the period when Dion says he could have seen Adnan. But let's go on. Wednesday, January 20th was a half day for exams, with school getting out early. Thursday, January 21st was a half day for exams, with school getting out early. Friday, January 22nd was the end of the semester, so there was no school. Saturday, January 23rd was a weekend, so there was no school. And Sunday, January 24th was a weekend, so there was no school. Reviewing all this, in this 24-day period, we have 14 days where there was no school, 2 days of regular absences for Adnan, 1 day of religious absence, and 2 end-of-semester half days for exams. So, cycling back to the days we skipped, that leaves only 5 possible days between January 1st and January 24th for the day that Adnan came across Dion and Dion's car. Number 1, Tuesday, January 5th. Number 2, Thursday, January 7th. Number 3, Monday, January 11th. Number 4, Tuesday, January 12th, and number 5, Wednesday, January 13th, the day Hay disappeared. And guess what? Only one of these 5 days had a boys' home basketball game. Yep, Wednesday, January 13th.
Beyond all that, 2 of these 5 days are very easy to knock out as the day of the Dion Adnan meetup. Let's start with Tuesday, January 5th. First, it's solidly before mid-January when Dion started training for baseball. Second, it's a Tuesday, and Dion said he trained on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. Third, there was no boys' home basketball game that day. Instead, there was one on Wednesday, January the 6th, but as we noted, Adnan was absent from school that day. Fourth, there was no track practice on January the 5th. Instead, Adnan and the track team were miles away at the 5th Regiment Armory after school, competing in a track meet that started at 3:45 p.m. Next, let's turn to Tuesday, January 12th, the day before Hay disappeared. First, it's a Tuesday, and again, Dion said he only trained on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. Second, there was no boys' home basketball game that day. There was one on Wednesday, January 13th, and that's one of the keys to this case. Third, again, there was no track practice on January 12th. Instead, Adnan and the track team were again miles away after school, competing in the Baltimore County Relays, which again started at 3:45 p.m. So yeah, neither of these days are the day that Adnan met up with Dion from 3 to 3:30, because among other things, Adnan was miles away from Woodlawn, competing in track meets that started at 3:45 p.m. So now we're down to only 3 theoretically possible days when Adnan met up with Dion. And again, Wednesday, January 13th was the only one of these that featured a boys' home basketball game, which is the critical anchor Adnan raised all the way back in March 1999. Let's first look at Monday, January 11th. First, there was no boys' home basketball game that day, although there was a girls' home basketball game. Second, Dion described the day in question as a warm day that turned cold. January 11th had a high of 28 degrees and a low of 15 degrees, so it was never warm or even above freezing. Third, Dion said he only trained for baseball on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. And this was a Monday. Even if you stretch and say he could have trained on a Tuesday, there's no real way this happened on a Monday. Fourth, Dion said his car was fixed on a Saturday and that he drove it for a few days at school before it broke down again. So again, there's no way Adnan met up with Dion on Monday, January 11th, which would have been his first day back at school after having his car fixed. So that leaves just Thursday, January the 7th as the only other possible day when Dion could have seen Adnan. But again, there are issues that knock it out of contention. First, January 7th is early January, and once again, Dion said he didn't start training for baseball until mid-January. Second, as we've noted, Saturday, January 2nd was a frigid day that doesn't fit at all with the day that Dion describes as the day that his car was fixed. Third, as with January 11th, January 7th was a cold day, with a high of 35 degrees and a low of 26 degrees, not matching up with the warm day that Dion described for his car breaking down. Fourth, and most importantly, there was no boys' or girls' home basketball game that day, so Dion didn't see Adnan on January 7th. This then leaves us with the only one of the five theoretically possible days Dion could have seen Adnan that had a boys' home basketball game. Wednesday, January 13th. This is the day that Adnan says he saw Dion. The day that Hay disappeared before picking up her cousin at 3:15 p.m. So does this day line up with Dion's memory? First, as noted, there was a boys' home basketball game that day. Specifically, Woodlawn hosted Parkville. According to the next day's newspaper, Woodlawn won 66-56. Second, the weather works pretty well with his memory. It was unseasonably warm on Saturday, January 9th, followed by the temperature dropping for the next 2 days, followed by it getting warmer, followed by the temperature dropping on the day in question. It's not a completely perfect fit, but it's a far better fit than the few other possible days. Third, January 13th was a Wednesday, and Dion remembers this happening on a Wednesday or Thursday, possibly a Friday, because those are the days he trained for baseball. Fourth, Dion remembers driving his car for a few days at school after it was serviced before it broke down, which also fits well with a Wednesday. Fifth, Adnan had track practice that day. Sixth, this was during Ramadan. Seventh, this was in mid-January, when Dion would have started training for baseball. Eighth, Dion remembers Adnan going to or coming from the Woodlawn Public Library, the latter of which would line up well with Asia saying she left Adnan behind at the library at about 2:40 p.m.
In turn, this takes us back to the 4-3 ruling by Maryland's highest court. Again, in denying Adnan a new trial based on his attorney's failure to contact Asia McLean, the four-justice majority held that, quote, the jury could have disbelieved that Mr. Saeed killed Ms. Lee by 2:36 p.m., as the state's timeline suggested, yet still believe that Mr. Saeed had the opportunity to kill Ms. Lee after 2:40 p.m. Ms. McLean's testimony, according to her affidavit, failed to account for Mr. Saeed's whereabouts after 2:40 p.m. on January 13, 1999. In other words, according to the court, Adnan still could have gotten a ride from Hay after 2:40 p.m. and then killed her at the end of that ride. But now we know for a fact that that's not true. Instead, shortly after Asia left Adnan behind the library, he walked to the front of the school gym and came upon Dion and his car. Adnan didn't get a ride from Hay to Best Buy and kill her at 3 or 3:10 p.m., and he didn't make a come-and-get-me call at 3:15 p.m. He was with Dion from around 3 to 3:30, helping him with his car and telling him about his family's mechanic who had recently fixed his own car, the same make and model as Dion's. Adnan now has an alibi not just through 2:40 p.m., but also through 3:30 p.m., well past the time that Hay was supposed to pick up her cousin. This means he couldn't have killed her. Simply put, that is actual innocence. Now, actual innocence has both a factual meaning and a legal meaning. In terms of the factual meaning, large-scale polls regarding this case have shown that around 73% of the public thinks that Adnan is innocent. And around the same number said in a recent Baltimore Sun poll that Ivan Bates should seek to vacate Adnan's conviction. After this reveal, it's now clear that Adnan is factually innocent of this crime. He now has a rock-solid alibi past the time that Hay was supposed to pick up her cousin, meaning he couldn't have committed the crime. I'll say that again. Adnan could not have committed the crime. And that sticky 27% who don't believe in Adnan's innocence can't claim the same things they did against Asia McLean, real or imagined. We're sure you heard them, that Asia's letters are odd, that she wanted to insert herself into the situation, etc., etc. The Maryland courts, by the way, rejected all these allegations, but there are some that still cling to them. We have none of that with Dion. Really, the only question you have is why you're hearing his story for the first time now. But here's the thing. Dion didn't know he saw Adnan on the day of Hay's disappearance. Sure, he remembered Adnan helping him with his car in January of 1999, and he also remembered other things, like it being Ramadan and during the day of a boys' home basketball game. But that by itself, that wasn't enough to put the pieces together and pinpoint this as the day Hay disappeared. And even during my call with Dion, both of us didn't know what day this happened, and I've been working on this case for decades. It wasn't until Colin cross-referenced what Dion said with the school schedule, Adnan's attendance records, and historical newspapers that Colin realized this could only have happened on January 13th, the day Hay disappeared. As a result, there's really no reason to doubt Dion, and it seems likely that most of the 27% of people still thinking Adnan is guilty will now know that he's innocent. Sure, there will still be that squeaky wheel 1 or 2% who will stick to their priors, but in terms of factual innocence, this case is now closed. Adnan did not kill Hayman Lee.
But actual innocence also has a legal meaning. Actually, two of them. Maryland Rule 4-332 allows for a defendant to bring a petition for a writ of actual innocence. There are two main requirements. First, that newly discovered evidence creates a substantial or significant possibility, as that standard has been judicially determined, that the result may have been different, and the basis for that statement. And second, that the evidence actually be newly discovered, meaning that it's evidence which, with due diligence, could not have been discovered in time to move for a new trial, pursuant to Rule 4-331. The second part can be tricky because I don't really know how to square its requirement with Gutierrez gaslighting Adnan about him having the wrong days for his Dion and Asia alibis. That said, there's a pretty good alibi case under this rule by the state Supreme Court in Seward versus State that could be used to support a petition for actual innocence. The question, of course, is whether Adnan will ever be successful in state court in Maryland after the rug has already been pulled out from him twice. This then takes the second legal meaning of actual innocence. People in prison or on probation based upon state convictions can bring a petition for a writ of habeas corpus in federal court. One of the grounds for such a petition is ineffective assistance of counsel. Now, as we noted earlier in this episode, Judge Martin Welch found that Christina Gutierrez gave ineffective assistance of counsel by failing to use the AT&T disclaimer to cross-examine the state's cell tower expert. But the state appellate courts concluded this claim is procedurally defaulted because it wasn't included in Adnan's initial PCR proceeding back in 2010. But guess what? There's a mechanism by which a procedurally defaulted claim can be revived in federal court, such as Maryland federal court, with Maryland being located in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. It's based upon the Supreme Court's opinion in a case called Schlupp, and here's how it works. First, the defendant must present evidence of actual innocence, which is defined as, quote, new reliable evidence, whether it be exculpatory scientific evidence, trustworthy eyewitness accounts, or critical physical evidence that was not presented at trial that would prevent any reasonable juror from finding him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Second, if a federal court finds actual innocence, that revives claims that were previously procedurally defaulted, such as the cell tower claim. Turning to Adnan's case. Dion, of course, was not presented at trial, and we've explained throughout this episode why his alibi is reliable and rock solid. Moreover, we have also seen why no reasonable juror would find Adnan guilty beyond reasonable doubt based upon Dion. As the state Supreme Court concluded, Asia alibied Adnan until 2:40 p.m., destroying the state's crime timeline, but leaving the possibility the jurors could have found Adnan got a ride from Hay after 2:40 and killed her at the end of the ride. But now, Dion eliminates that possibility, providing Adnan an alibi through 3:30 p.m., well after Hay would have needed to be abducted before picking up her cousin. So you might wonder, is there any basis to believe that a federal court in the Fourth Circuit would find actual innocence based in part on an alibi witness? The answer is, there are actually two cases on point. And guess what? They're both cases to be covered on Undisclosed. I even helped moot one of them, meaning I helped prepare the attorney for oral arguments before the judges. That case was the case of Ronnie Long, which we covered in a four-episode series back in 2018. And if you think 26 years is too long for alibi evidence to help prove actual innocence, Ronnie Long was convicted back in 1976, a full 44 years before his case was heard by the Fourth Circuit in 2020. And yep, that court found a colorable claim of actual innocence based in part on alibi evidence. This later led to Long's release from prison in 2020, making him the 10th longest-serving exoneree in U.S. history. Number 12 on that list is Charles Ray Finch, whose case we covered in a special episode in 2019. Like Long, Finch was convicted in 1976. His Fourth Circuit opinion was a year earlier, with a court finding he'd established actual innocence based in part on alibi evidence, leading to his release after almost 43 years of wrongful conviction. So yeah, A federal court can absolutely find Adnan actually innocent based upon Dion as a new alibi witness, with a precedent coming from factually similar cases you might have heard years ago on this very podcast. And then, if the federal court does find actual innocence, it can hear Adnan's cell tower claim, the same claim that led Judge Welch to grant him a new trial after hearing from experts in person. If the federal judge comes to the same conclusion as Judge Welch in the cell tower issue, this case is over, and Adnan's convictions are erased.
Of course, all this adversarial process could be avoided by one person, Ivan Bates. As we've noted, while Bates withdrew the motion to vacate Adnan's convictions, he said he was open to revisiting his decision if there were new evidence that exonerates Adnan. Well, Ivan, here it is. An alibi witness Adnan brought up all the way back in 1999 with a clear way to check his story. And now that alibi witness is willing to go on the record with us already having cross-referenced and corroborated his claims. Before, Ivan, you personally met with Asia McClain, finding her very believable and much more credible than Jay Wiles. You didn't mention Asia at all in withdrawing the motion to vacate, which could merely mean you agreed with the majority of Maryland's highest court that Adnan could have committed the crime after 2:40 p.m. But now, as we've established, Adnan has an alibi through 3:30 p.m., well after the time that Hay could have been abducted. So, how about you speak with Dion like you spoke with Asia? And if, like us, you find that everything he says checks out, you have the evidence that exonerates Adnan. You now have a case of actual innocence that was prosecuted by your office. The Maryland Rules of Professional Conduct say that one of the special duties of a prosecutor is to seek to remedy a conviction when you have clear and convincing evidence establishing that a defendant in your jurisdiction was convicted of an offense that the defendant did not commit. The ball's now in your court, and ethics and duty dictate that you declare Adnan could not and did not commit this crime.
Hey guys, it's Meethal, executive producer of Undisclosed Toward Justice. Want to give a quick shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production and Animal Weapon for our theme music. This time around, we're doing something different. You can leave us questions, comments, thoughts, and suggestions in a voice note, and we might even play it on air. Just go to speakpipe.com/undisclosed and start recording. For those of you that want to engage on social media, you can follow, share, and like us on all the different platforms. We're on Instagram and Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. For folks on X, we're still at Undisclosed Pod. Also, please go to subscribe to our new YouTube channel at Undisclosed Pod so you don't miss out on any content there. Whether you're a new or returning listener, you can check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our revamped website at undisclosedpod.com. If you want to follow Colin and Rabia on social media as well, you can find Rabia at RabiaSquared2 on Instagram, and Colin is at EvidenceProf on Instagram and Blue Sky. Thanks for your continued support for us and for our sponsors. Until next time.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.